You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a journey to a Hmong New Year celebration.
Like many festivities, Hmong New Year celebrations were put on hold in the first year of the pandemic. Some gatherings returned this last year, including a New Year celebration at Sheboygan North High School. As we continue to settle into 2022, Gong Sua Xiong brings us the sounds and voices from that event.
I sat in the gym and watched as the opening dancers began their performance. People were quickly snapping their grand entrance photos before pouring in to join the main event.
Hmong New Year is a time to celebrate, gather family and friends together, make new friends, and find soulmates.
Sheila Ya is the co-chair for Hmong Mutual Assistance Association, the organization in charge of hosting this year's Hmong New Year in Sheboygan.
I think COVID played a role that gave a lot of individuals, families, friends, and the community a different perspective. It gave them a way to see a different way of life, that gathering means something to you. So this year, it brought out everyone back to spend time with each other.
The lobby is also full of people. There are people waiting in line for Hmong food. The menu consists of rice, chicken, papaya salad, and so much more. And there's an even longer line of people ordering bubble tea. There are vendors selling fruits and vegetables, clothing and jewelry, and other merchandise. Fashion is very important in the Hmong culture. Most people today are dressed in a jacket with embroidered textile, a white pleated skirt or black pants wrapped under a waistband. And of course, the entire outfit is adorned with beads and jewelry. You hear that jingling sound? That's the sound of coins. Silver coins are also a big part of traditional Hmong clothes. Historically, these coins represented wealth.
Everyone is dressed up in beautiful outfits.
Meng Xiong is a sponsor from the Wisconsin United Coalition of Mutual Assistance Association.
You know, I love the Hmong New Year. I grew up going to it every year. We get to showcase talent with dance, singing.
Bei Jiu Long Gao Hmong means our young Hmong woman.
And the pageants.
The best performers win a trophy and up to $1,000 in prize money, which they often use to cover travel and clothing expenses. The hallway next to the stage and audience is bustling with dancers preparing for their performances.
When I did perform after COVID-19, it was just really exciting.
Pamela Va is a dancer from the dance team Ling Mom Hong, which in English translates to Hmong Sisters.
I know a lot of dance teams had a lot of ideas, even more ideas throughout the pandemic, and they have become a lot more creative. You're just ready to come out and show everyone what you got.
Take these opportunities to come join us. I would say challenge yourself to immerse yourself in another person's culture. We have a lot in common. You just grow so much as a person when you open your heart and your mind to other cultures. So come join us.
Gong Sua Xiong brought us that story on a Hmong New Year celebration in Sheboygan. She's a student at UW-Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now to Venus and what some astronomers call a long overlooked planet in the search for extraterrestrial life. Venus is often called Earth's twin, roughly the same mass as our home planet. And that leads us to the question, could there be life on Venus? What can it tell us about climate change on the planet Earth? All Things Venus, 800-642-1234. Sanjay Limaye is a distinguished scientist at UW-Madison Space Science and Engineering Center. Sanjay, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back with WPR.
Well, remind us, where is Venus located from the Sun, and what are its features? What are its characteristics?
Well, Venus is the second closest planet to the Sun, situated between Mercury and Venus. And it is roughly the same size. It has a similar mass. And we believe that both Venus and Earth and all the planets basically formed at the same time from the solar nebula. And given the similarities between the physical similarities between Venus and Earth, roughly the same size, same mass, both have atmospheres, the possibility of water being on the surface was considered in the 19th century. Svante Arrhenius, the person who first talked about greenhouse warming on Earth, had written about Venus possibly having oceans / forests on the surface in his book published in the 1900s. And that led to the notion that Venus could have had creatures of trees, fauna, and things like that. And that led to many movies, Hollywood, not just Hollywood, but also in Russia, Germany, and other countries, science fiction movies about life on Venus. Even Zsa Zsa Gabor, I believe, or Eva, one of the Gabor sisters, mm-hmm. I don't remember which one, was featured in. And then, they had civilization, cultures, etc.
I was going to just jump in here on this journey through history in Venus. The late astronomer Carl Sagan once said that Venus is the planet in our solar system most like hell. What did he mean by that?
Well, Carl Sagan was one of the first scientists to actually look into the high temperatures of Venus. And history was that between these ideas of life on Venus on the surface, when we actually began to observe Venus with instruments, it became rather convincing that the surface of Venus was extremely hot, hot enough to melt lead, so they say, about 900 degrees, 950 degrees Fahrenheit. And that basically destroyed all ideas of life on Venus. And Carl was the one who first pointed out that a runaway greenhouse on Venus was the reason for the high surface temperature. Once we started looking at the clouds, and the clouds have been imaged for more than a century now, we see these light and dark patches in the blue UV images of the global cloud cover. And we can't explain those. We don't know what is absorbing the sunlight in the blue UV range of the spectrum. And so a few years ago, myself and a few colleagues just wondered if those could be due to some microorganisms in the clouds of Venus. So the idea got researched just a few years ago.
Well, scientists have, as you look at the clouds, they've detected this chemical in Venus's atmosphere through telescope observations. And I'm just wondering, why are they so interested in this chemical phosphine?
Oh, phosphine is just one of several gases which are produced by life, but they can also be produced by chemistry, geochemistry. And the other two gases which have been ignored in the past are ammonia and methane. Ammonia was detected in the 1970s using a very simple instrument on a Russian probe that entered the Venus atmosphere. And methane was detected in a later probe pioneer Venus in 1978. Mm-hmm. And these three gases are not expected in a in an atmosphere with a composition like Venus's under equilibrium, which means everything is stable and nothing is changing sort of idea. Chemically, they are unstable in the atmosphere. So their presence is not expected. And that the first detection of ammonia led to some people commenting that it simply cannot exist there. And so people didn't pay much attention to ammonia. Methane, there hasn't been much discussion. You may recall that on Mars, methane was also detected from remote observations, and people raise the same objections. It simply can't exist because it's not there. And then lo and behold, comes along Curiosity rover, and they find periodic, well, not periodic exactly, but sporadic detections of presence of methane in the Martian atmosphere. So, you know, science works in strange ways. Something, and then other people say, no, it can be true, and then other people try to go and verify it. So that's what's happening with Venus. But with Venus, there are just too many questions. And the trouble is that Venus is hiding all its secrets in plain sight of us, and we just can't probe through the clouds and understand everything we want to know about Venus.
Well, I want to jump in here because I want to know what camp you fall in then. If there is something curious or strange going on in the Venusian atmosphere, are you in the camp that, you know what, there might be life here? Or are you in that pushback camp that this is just, you know, mysterious or yet to be explained atmospheric or geologic processes going on Venus? Where do you stand?
Well, I hate to be put into a camp.
Us journalists, Sanjay, us journalists like to put people in camps. We gotta separate.
No, I understand, but you know, camp is the words, imaginations of the gulag and the constitution.
That's not good. Okay, so there is a gray area as well. So you can be in the middle. camps.
I'm sort of ambivalent. You know, I mean. I have been looking at Venus since my advisor, late Werner Sumi, on this campus. He was a member of the Mariner Venus imaging team. I happened to be his graduate student at that point. And when the first high-resolution images of Venus came back from that spacecraft, I was lucky enough to be able to work on them and measure the circulations. I was one of the first ones to measure the circulation with one Sumi and another colleague, Bob Kraus, and we confirmed the rapid rotation of the Venus atmosphere and showed that the entire atmosphere was organized like a tropical cyclone in terms of its structure.
Tropical cyclone, wow.
Yeah, it's like a hurricane. You know, if you take a hurricane and move it over the pole of Venus and look down, that's exactly what it looks like, Venus on both poles, north and south. And that has been persistent since we discovered it in Mariner 10 data. And every image, every mission has basically confirmed that structure. What we still don't know, what is causing those contrasts. Sumi called them cumulus bituminous, sort of in a jocular fashion. Bituminous, it's like, you know, like coal. Now, he might not have been too far off because carbon is one of the species that can indeed absorb ultraviolet light. But the trouble is that more than two dozen candidates have been proposed for these absorbers, and they can't be confirmed as the compounds causing the contrast. And so we proposed microorganisms because there are some bacteria on Earth which have similar spectral properties as the Venus clouds. So we just wondered whether it could be life, and why we can't confirm the identity is because we haven't been looking for a biological signature. So put me, you could say that, yes, I'm in the life camp. On the other hand, recently some colleagues have proposed that Venus could have never formed any oceans because it was always too hot and the water vapor remained in that form in the atmosphere and it could never condense. So now we had to go and address that question. Did liquid water actually exist on Venus? Because some colleagues of mine, Michael Bay and Tony Tilgenio and others, have done some modeling work, and they proposed, or they actually concluded from their modeling studies, that if liquid water existed on the surface of Venus, it could have survived for more than 900 million years, maybe as long as 2 or 3 billion years ago.
Wow.
I
just want to pause right here as we learn that Venus is just keeping us guessing. We have UW-Madison Distinguished Scientist Sanjay Limaye exploring the planets, Venus in particular, for more than 3 decades. Do you think there is life in Venus's atmosphere? Do you think NASA has been too laser-focused on getting to Mars and has overlooked studying Venus? What do you want to know about Earth's so-called twin? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're learning about Venus news, getting some planetary updates with a distinguished planetary scientist from UW-Madison on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to news out of Astronomy Magazine yesterday, a research team from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, preparing the first private mission to Venus to search for life. Target launch date is May of next year. How do you feel about the Venus Life Finder mission? What do you think of the role of universities and private companies and NASA in the search for what is out there? Planetary explorations, 800-642-1234. UW-Madison Sanjay Limaye of the Space Science and Engineering Center with us for about 6 more minutes. Sanjay, what do you make of this mission from MIT and this Life Finder mission from and what they plan to do?
I think it is exciting, and it is great to see some private companies putting their money towards looking for life on Venus. NASA, being a publicly funded agency, typically has to take a more cautious approach and a measured approach, you know, go step by step, because they have to answer to Congress and to the public. But this is a nice set of 3 missions proposed by Sarah Seeger and her colleagues, and I hope they succeed.
Well, they told Astronomy that this is high risk, high reward science and stands to possibly answer one of the greatest scientific mysteries of all. What are the risks in a mission like this?
Well, the first mission is a mini probe. They had to launch it, get it to Venus, then it enters the atmosphere at a very high speed. So the probe will experience extremely high decelerations. It's like running into a brick wall, in a sense. So the instruments have to survive. It has only one instrument, as far as I know. And then the data has to be collected as the probe falls through the clouds, and it will pass through the cloud layer in just a matter of minutes, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, and send the data back, and we have to receive it appropriately on Earth. And it's not clear exactly what their scheme is to collect the data, but I'm sure they know what they're doing. And
You'll be watching. Yes. Let's take a call now. Bruce is joining us from Holman with a question about Venus. Bruce, hi. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I'm a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society, and my personal question is, with the mixture of greenhouse gases and volcanic activity on Venus, especially the mixture of greenhouse gases, does Venus present itself as a cautionary tale for what could be in the future of our own planet if we don't curtail our use of fossil fuels and production of methane and CO2 and greenhouse gases?
Bruce, thank you. Sanjay?
Excellent question. And yes, in a sense, we are going to warm up. The volcanoes have a dual role in controlling climate. If they put out a lot of sulfur ash particulates, they can rise very high in the atmosphere and cause cooling. You know, recall the summer of no crops in the 1800s when a volcano in the Philippines blew up and the climate was quite cool. On the other hand, it does pump more greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide into it, about the amount of methane, I'm not sure. But the most recent eruption in Tonga was underwater. It was enormous. Even though it was underwater, the cloud went up 20 miles up into the air. So that's not good. However, in the far distant future, the sun will not continue shining at the current rate forever. It will eventually start losing its fuel, and it will start getting bigger and bigger. And as it expands, it will essentially cover up first Venus, then Earth, and then keep on expanding out. By that time, it'll be too late for anybody to survive. It'll be too hot. So it is known in the far distant future. The question is, by pumping more carbon dioxide, are we going to make it even sooner? We have a lot of water, so it's going to take a lot of time before we lose the oceans and become Venus-like. However, life doesn't cannot survive if the global average temperature is more than 42 degrees or something around that time, average temperature. So it's going to cause some grief for a lot of civilization.
Well, Sanjay, thank you so much for joining us and explaining the science.
Thank you.
Sanjay Limaye is a distinguished scientist at UW-Madison's Space Science and Engineering Center. Just ahead, we talk with a toxicologist and emergency medicine pharmacist about the management science and history of poisons. What do you want to know about poison? Join in, share your thoughts. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.